to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and the latecomer, Ezra Ginsberg.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the program. He covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for HockeyWriters.com. He also writes for Forbes.com. Mike Colligan. Mike, good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Drew. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, as always. Mike, let's start with the returning Jordan Staal. He comes back to the Pittsburgh Penguins lineup later on this afternoon. You know, what has the team missed? You know, with Staal out of the lineup, what does he really bring to the table for this Penguins squad?
Well, when the Penguins won the Stanley Cup a few years ago, it was based on the strength down the middle. They had three centers that no team in the NHL could handle, no team could match, and it's kind of been a situation since then where they haven't been able to get all three of those guys, Staal, Malkin, and Crosby, into the lineup at the same time. And so they become a pretty standard team when you look at it that way. And as of late, with Sidney Crosby out of the lineup, now you're down to just Evgeny Malkin. And there's really been a drop-off in talent after the top line of Malkin, Kunitz, and Neal. So getting Staal back in the lineup allows you to now have a stronger second line. Staal, obviously, a defensive center, so that takes some of the defensive responsibilities that were kind of being pushed onto the plate of Evgeny Malkin. And offensively, Staal has also become a definite threat and a secondary scoring threat. He has, I believe, 15 goals this year, and he's really come a long way, I think, not only in the goal-scoring department, but also his skating. He's a very underrated skater, a guy with a big stride that is tough to handle for teams when you have a 1-2 punch with Malkin and Staal going back-to-back.
Mike, you mentioned Evgeny Malkin, James Neal, and Chris Kunitz, and you can make the argument that that's one of the best lines in hockey right now, if not the best line. I want to focus in on one of those guys, and that's Evgeny Malkin. And I've been saying this for weeks now, and it's not some type of revelation or going making a bold prediction, but in my opinion, just the way he's playing, I think that Malkin is the MVP of the league right now, the Hart Trophy guy, and the best player in the league right now. Just how good has he been this year, considering that he missed half of the year last year, and you know, the way he's elevating the play of Neal and Kunitz? How good is he right now? And in your opinion, is he, you know, the undisputed best player in the NHL, most valuable player?
Well, I think it's a good point that few of us, we all forget this guy is not even, you know, a year off of that knee injury that he had. I think it was mid-February or maybe right around this time. And so we're looking at a guy that's 12 months off of an ACL injury that many people believe you're not really 100% until you get a year out in that rehab process. And that's what's scary is, as good as he's playing right now, is he even as good as he can possibly be? And I think a big reason for that is he finally committed to off-season training, because he was in a situation where he was away from the game for a little while. He realized that he can't take these things for granted, and I think it really focused him in on off-season training. He went over to Russia with Sergei Gonchar, and there were videos of him swimming and going through grueling workouts, and that's something, you know, Evgeny Malkin wasn't a guy that was doing that in previous seasons. And so I think he's really focused, and without having Crosby in the lineup, I know the coaching staff's gone to him and said, listen, this is your team. And we saw that a few years ago when Sidney Crosby was down with a high ankle sprain for a couple months. Evgeny Malkin really took charge and came into his own and became a star player that he's capable of being. And quite honestly, he'd be a star on any team in the league. But unfortunately, he's usually out there with Sidney Crosby where he plays second fiddle. So I think he's become the Pittsburgh Penguins. And if Sidney Crosby's back this year, if he's not, I don't think that's going to matter, because now they have that leader, that star player in Evgeny Malkin. And I think, at least so far, I would agree that he's probably right at the top in the MVP race for what he's allowed the Penguins to do without Crosby and without Staal. They missed Chris Letang for a couple months with a concussion. He's allowed them to stay right at the top of that Eastern Conference there and has been certainly very important offensively for the Penguins.
Mike, you mentioned Sidney Crosby. Where are things at with him?
Well, Crosby is skating right now, which I think is a good sign, but it sounds like he still has symptoms, which to me is not too encouraging when you're talking about a guy that has not been in game action for over 3 months now and he's still experiencing symptoms. I would not be too optimistic about him returning, at least in the regular season this year. It also comes into play of how do they handle his return with the salary cap. And mm-hmm. right now, if he comes back, they have no room to add to this team. If he is out for an extended period of time, then Ray Shiro, general manager, can kind of go into buyer mode and really improve this team for the playoff drive. I think Crosby right now, as we heard a couple weeks ago, they've focused now more on a neck injury, a soft tissue injury. And so he's getting work on that every day. I'm hoping they don't lose sight of this concussion problem that he's had for 13 months now, because I worry that's still kind of the number one issue. And I think at least this neck focus gives him something to think about each day. And instead of sitting in a dark room wondering when or if he'll ever get better from this concussion symptoms, he can now at least focus on the neck injury. It gives him something to kind of take his mind off of all the frustrations he's had. And I think he's been in better spirits lately, and I think that's a good thing. And you remember, he's a captain of this team. He's a leader, and right now he's not out there, and it can be frustrating to not be able to do anything to help your team, especially when they were going through a 6 or 7 game losing streak about a couple weeks ago here. Yeah, I think it was really wearing on him and frustrating him. And so I think they'll take it week by week. There's no timetable at this point, but certainly something to keep an eye on as we head towards the playoffs.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day, Jets, Penguins, puck drop, 1 o'clock here on TSN 1290. We're joined by Mike Colligan from HockeyWriters.com. He covers the Penguins. Mike, we mentioned Crosby's injury, we mentioned Malkin's injury, Tyler Kennedy's now out. It seems like each year the Penguins have a rash of injuries. Is there any heat, especially given, you know, the Crosby concussion, soft tissue debacle, for lack of a better word, is there any heat? How much heat is being leveled upon the medical staff of the Pittsburgh Penguins?
You know, there was a couple weeks ago, I think, when all the rumors were going around with Crosby, and there was talk of a broken neck and, you know, all of these crazy theories that were out there. And I think the biggest problem is no one really knows more than 5% of the whole story and what's happened here. And it's tough when you also involve agents and parents and every other guy that is in Sidney Crosby's ear, as you can imagine. It starts to get a little bit messy where it's going many different directions. But the Penguins have always been a team that have encouraged their players to go out and get second and third opinions. And no one knows what happened with Crosby and whether he took the opportunity to go out and get those extra opinions initially after these concussions occurred. But there was a little bit of heat a couple weeks ago. That's died down. I think a lot of it was actually being thrown from outside of Pittsburgh and people that maybe didn't know the entire situation. But you know, you think about all these, look at Peter Mueller in Colorado or any of these guys that have had concussions and they're in and out of the lineup. This is not an exact science, and I think anyone that has dealt with that in the past knows that there's no prescribed rehab treatment. There's no answer that you can come up with and that's going to make everything okay. And I think that people are understanding, at least here in Pittsburgh, of the challenge that the medical staff has faced from a concussion point of view. And when you look at some of these other injuries like Tyler Kennedy, there's been broken hands and everything from shot blocking. Those are things that had happened in the routine portions of the game that you're used to, and it's just been a series of 2 years of bad luck for the Penguins here with all those injuries.
Mike, the trade deadline's quickly approaching. It's just over a couple of weeks away, and you know the Pittsburgh Penguins are in, as you mentioned, they're doing very well right now in a playoff position and trying to, you know, improve each day. What do you think the Penguins are going to do at the trade deadline? What do you think Ray Shiro is looking for, maybe in a positional area or in a specific player?
Well, a lot of people have always focused on getting wingers for Sidney Crosby or getting Malkin. Last year they were able to go out with that Malkin injury and acquire James Neal, who they never would have been able to add if Malkin didn't get hurt. And I think a lot of people have not realized that, at least here. So that was fortunate in a way that they were able to add a piece like him that's now becoming a 40 or 45 goal scorer. That was huge for them. So I think they've added that winger. Now I think they really need to focus on defense, and they've got some talented defensemen, the 7 guys that are pretty good skaters, very good offensively, but they don't really have that big guy that can clear the front of the net in front of Marc-Andre Fleury. And that's something that's been lacking. And I think Derek England, who's a very physical guy, a guy that fights quite a bit, he's improved, but he's not a guy when you get into playoff hockey and you're talking about facing a team like the Boston Bruins, who can run three and four lines. That's not I'm not content with the defensemen that they have, and I think they'll maybe look to add a physical number five or number six guy. A Brian Allen comes to mind as someone that can contribute on the penalty kill and really add that physical element and also match up against the top pairs. Because, quite frankly, Paul Martin, who's their highest paid defenseman at $5 million in a long-term contract, he's been very disappointing. And he's a guy that I think they were hoping would contribute on the power play, and he hasn't been able to do that. A guy that's been prone to mistakes where early in his career he was kind of a very solid defenseman that didn't make those mistakes. So he's a guy that I think they're wondering, can they rely on him for the long run here, and especially in the playoffs, and I think they maybe look to add on the back end just to make sure.
I was going to say,
I think we may have lost Mike for a moment there.
Mike seems to have been hit a tornado.
Oh, beer, guys.
You're still there?
Yep.
Mike, I was going to say, you're cutting up a little bit there, Mike.
Why don't we call Mike
We'll
back.
Call Mike back, anyways. Mike, you there?
Oh, he's still there.
Okay, there you go.
Well, Mike, I'll get in here. I was going to, you actually stole my next question regarding Paul Martin, and disappointing. It seems like a guy who has some skill set, but is limited in a number of areas. One area that the Penguins have excelled in is penalty killing. And I've got to watch him on numerous occasions. You've obviously watched him far more than I have. And I want to ask you about the route to success for them from the penalty kill, because you see certain teams seem a little bit lost on the PK. It seems like the Penguins, at least to me, do as good a job as anybody of angling from the top of the box down to the boards and always keeping kind of the play on the outside. Can you talk about the success on the penalty kill and what is that key to success?
That's exactly it. You nailed it completely, because they are a team that looks to dictate play on the penalty kill, which you wouldn't think is possible when you're out there with one less guy than the other team, but they look to dictate that play, and specifically it's when you get into the zone, they force the puck down the boards to the corner, and that's where they know they can get odd man situations and outnumber the puck and often create turnovers. And actually, their mandate is they have 7 or 8 seconds to kind of be in attack mode. If they can't get the puck and get it out of the ice and send it down in 8 seconds, then they fall back into a little more standard penalty kill. But in the first 7 or 8 seconds, when you watch this afternoon, look at how aggressive that the wingers will be on the boards. They'll be forcing it down behind the net, and that's where the defensemen will attack, look for turnovers, and really try and get that puck out before the other team can set up. And I think that's been a big success. They've added Zdeněk Mihalík last year, who is another big key to that, a great defensive defenseman that's very underrated. But he's been a huge addition to the penalty kill, and it's not a coincidence. The last two seasons, they've been right up there in the top five. But you nailed it completely. It's dictating the play, trying to force teams to do what they want to do instead of having a power play kind of run-free wheel out there.
Mike Colligan, HockeyWriters.com. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Mike.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Enjoy the game this afternoon.
Let me quickly in before the break. If you're not reading it, we've said this many times on the show, if you're not reading Mike's stuff online about the Penguins.
He's a very good writer.
No, for a great writer. Yep. It gets in depth in certain parts of the game, both on the ice and off the ice, that most people don't get into. And it's not only well-written, but it's informative.
And you know what?
I encourage
you
to read it.
Yeah, once again, thanks to Mike for coming on. And what's awesome, too, is when we were back on Kick, Mike used to be a fan of ours. Anybody who was a fan of ours when we were nobodies back on Kick.
We're still nobodies. We're still nobodies.
Yes, you're a bit of a big star.
Richie's somebody. I'm still a nobody.
Last night, Jeff Ross, as he's walking out of the Burton, he's pointing people, hey, 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 what's going on? And everybody's like, yes.
Once again, Jeff Ross last night, Drew, you know, coming from your lineage, Rumors Comedy Club lineage, you had to be there last night.
Yeah, I agree, Drew.
Jeff Ross was unbelievable. I think he's the funniest guy out there.
I don't think there's anybody funnier.
He's the best.
I'll tell you who's funnier. Whoever's playing at Rumors this week is funnier.
Are we going to get that clip of Jay Moore?
I'll go see Dustin Diamond.
I don't think you will. Anyways, you're...
Screech.
You're letting Screech into the bar?
Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be right back after these commercial messages. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to Mike Colligan of HockeyWriters.com for joining us. Still to come on the program... Craig Button from TSN is going to join us, and Arthur Staple from Newsday is going to join us. This segment is brought to you by Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, home of Canada's only coal-fired pizza oven. Taste the difference at Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, 1580 Taylor Avenue. Pizza baked, well done. I believe our plans are still to go have a little Carbone for some lunch, watch the Jets game there.
Absolutely.
We're going to watch Jets-Pens at Carbone tonight.
What kind of an order are we going to have?
Well, you like arugula.
I do like arugula.
I'll tell you what. No. The last time I've eaten with you, you've ordered, I think, 3 fruit cups, and you walked into my car this morning eating a banana.
Am I allowed to have some fruit, Drew?
You're a sellout.
You're eating poutine this morning.
Sellout? What, a food sellout?
Yeah, food sellout.
I had a trio of salad last
I'm going to back Richie up
you
here.
You had a Rich, trio of
three different salads.
Richie, I was at Richie's house the other day. He works out at home. He's eating well. You know what? I commend you.
You're eating well at all.
You're working out. I'm 225 pounds. I'm a fat slob. I should be taking your advice and eating bananas and salad instead of hamburgers and, you know, like
Drew lost 20 pounds cutting out pop and fries, man.
Hey, you should have seen Richard's salad last night too.
Yeah, he said he had a trio of salads.
It was
already
a trifecta salad.
Okay, do we have some news here?
Remus, you have a news clip and a breaking news update regarding Ezzy. Is that right?
Now it's time for Illegal Curve News. When the Illegal Curve Hockey Show was announced for a 7 a.m. start time, the big news around the station was if Ezra Ginsberg would show up on time. Tuesday evening, Hustler and Lawless declined to offer an opinion if Ezzy would show up on time.
Well, I don't want to get involved in that discussion, Hustler. We'll worry about our program. We'll let others
worry. All right,
about
I tell everyone else to play their own ball. They can play theirs. But
exactly.
Ezzy, good luck on this, man. I'll schedule a wake-up call if you need.
Their tone had changed Friday night. Hustler and Lawless put their name on the line.
Ezra Ginsberg will be here tomorrow morning at 6:45. He'll be in his seat. He'll be prepared. He'll be pumped. He'll be ready to go.
He'll be funny. He'll be entertaining.
He will be the lovable Ezra. Don't let me down, Ezzy!
As the story goes, Ezra Ginsberg was not in studio at the 7 a.m. start time and strolled in at a cool 7:35 a.m. His excuse, the classic Tyler Seguin saying his clock was still set to Montreal time. Signing off for Illegal Curve News, I'm Michael Remus.
You really have let down a number of people.
Well done, Remus.
That was good.
That was hilarious.
Well done. Yeah.
That was awesome.
That was well done, Remus.
Ezzy.
But you have let down a number of people.
Don't let me down, Ezzy.
Gary's going to be in here. Gary will be here, you know, around 10 o'clock or so. I suspect you'll hear about that from him. You've disappointed him.
Yeah, definitely disappointed Gary.
I'm going on the record in front of the entire city of Winnipeg right now.
Yeah.
I apologize to Gary Lawless. I have let him down.
He's your idol.
I have no excuses. I when I was doing the big show in December, just to defend myself, I was up early. I have no excuses. But I was here at 7:25. It wasn't 7:35.
No, that's way to hang your hat on being 25 minutes late, not 35 minutes late.
Yeah, well, I'll take what I can get.
Exactly. You drive the bus there. Let's talk about this Conference Board of Canada study. Ezzy, did you manage to find the study yesterday?
I did find it.
Okay, good. That was the first difficult part of it.
I did find it, which is funny because I wrote it. So I should be able to find my own study.
You know, it's a study that, on paper, I think makes sense without actually having... But, I mean, you can't just look at these things...
The funniest part of that study, because I think it's hilarious, the funniest part of that study is when they say, well, you need, you know, however many thousand, I think it's 800,000...
If you're less than 800,000 people in your city, you can support a hockey team, but eventually you're going to be in trouble.
800,000 was for hockey and then 200,000 for football, so Winnipeg couldn't work because that's a million people. Sports fans aren't mutually hockey and football fans aren't mutually exclusive. In fact, I'd bet you there's an increasingly large overlap between hockey fans and football fans.
Yeah, they become hockey fans.
You have tickets to the Jets and the Bombers. You're a sports fan. You're a Winnipeg sports fan. You don't. I mean, it's not like two separate groups.
No.
No.
And this is what the study law.
It's also not like, I also, you know, when I have the opportunity, I like to support the different art scenes in the city.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's not like you only buy, I mean.
What art scenes do you support in the city?
We go to theater. We go to the art gallery.
You go to the theater?
Yeah, absolutely.
Drew goes to theater. Oh, yeah, he does. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, thanks for, you can drive yourself off.
I didn't know there was theater in Winnipeg.
There's a ton of theater.
Like,
who are you kidding?
Dinner theater or like plays?
Not dinner theater.
Like
Magdalene Theater Center, Prairie Theater Exchange, all these. I mean, last Saturday night, I went to see Avenue Q. My cousin put on a performance of Avenue Q.
Have you seen Stomp?
That's not that's not really
theater.
That's not
a musical
really theater.
Okay,
but anyways,
I apologize.
You're losing your point.
I'm not cultured.
That's painfully obvious.
Not cultured.
No, but, I mean, that's true.
It's a matter of disposable income.
That's probably how people choose to spend it.
That's right.
They're not mutually exclusive, and I mean, that's a flaw inherent in the whole study, is if you get up with two groups like that.
Here's what I find interesting. Mark Shipman, who is pretty level-headed for the most part, especially when he's speaking in public.
Level-headed and a very, very smart businessman.
When he comes out and says, this is the most ridiculous study in the world, and he discredits it immediately.
Yep.
I don't think he's doing that. And he seemed like there was some legitimate emotion behind his words in that he thought it was a ridiculous argument.
He said it. I mean, you have a waiting list.
Yeah.
Fans can't sign up quick enough for season tickets to the Bombers. You have a waiting list of 8,000 people for the Jets. And the box, apparently the waiting list for the box is like 100 long. I mean, you know what? These studies, if you're going to put out a study, the Commerce Board of Canada, right? If you're going to put out a study this big, you might want to do some intense research on each market. Because otherwise, you're painting everybody with the same brush, and it's just not applicable. I mean, you need context. There's no context here. But the part I couldn't believe was the part about, oh, you need this many for this and this many for that.
Yeah. Do they really think that the 15,000 people who are going to Jets games aren't part of the same people who are going to all the other events
sports
in the city?
Fans. They're sports fans. By the way, the Bomber tickets. Yeah. Let's just talk about the Bomber tickets right now. You're not breaking the bank to go to Bomber games here.
They're reasonably priced.
A season ticket. I mean, what are season tickets? About $550?
Each? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere
that's
in
like
that.
Two or three Jets games.
I haven't paid you for last season yet, so I have no idea.
Yeah. That's like two or three Jets games. So, I mean, that's nine games, guys. Nine games and an exhibition game. 10 games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not cheap, but it's not exactly...
You're telling me that Winnipeg is in a worse position than some of these more manufacturing-based cities where they might have, you know, 1.5 million people, but everybody's struggling for work?
Also true.
I mean, the beauty of Winnipeg and why we've managed to get through the economic downturn so well...
Diverse economy.
...is we have a very diversified economy.
Stable economy.
It's very... Yeah, it's like... It's
slow
level.
And steady wins the race.
Exactly.
Low unemployment. You know, it's a young... We're getting... Our population has been increasing. Winnipeg's in a good position. You're
absolutely.
Right.
It really... The whole study just, like... You know, just because the numbers bear it out, which it might, there's significant flaws in just reporting the numbers with no context, like you said.
Exactly. Based on the study, then, I mean, Florida would be a huge success in hockey. They have a huge market for it.
Oh, there's millions of people. Who cares? If they don't want to go, they're not going to go. It doesn't matter. If they can't afford to go, they're not going to go. It doesn't matter.
But the conclusion of the study, Drew, was that Canada could support nine teams. That was basically... The conclusion. Is that not something we already knew?
Yeah, and also we knew that. But true. Another point is, you know, you have the Jets and the Bombers. I mean, aside from that overlap from like October, November, there really is no overlap. It's the Bombers are summer sport, July, August, September. The Jets aren't playing. It's not like you're competing.
And you throw in the Goldeyes, who have their own niche and do very well.
Absolutely.
There's no
affordable, fun time. I love
no competing. And on the topic, I know I'm going a little bit off topic here with the arts. I don't think that the Jets are competing with the arts at all. The Winnipeg arts scene is very
strong.
And now
they're back.
When the Jets came back, we had the Premier on, and I asked the Premier, you know, with the excitement around the hockey team, is there going to be any fear that that's going to negatively impact the rest of our great cultural institutions?
No.
And he said he didn't think so because he thought that people would support everything. And, you know, that's what you read in the article in the Free Press, that, you know, people are still going to the theater, they're still going to the opera. Yeah. Look, Norman Rockwell is coming to the art gallery.
Really?
I'm not a big art gallery guy, but I'm going to go see the exhibit of Norman Rockwell because, well, that's something that I'd like to go spend my money to see.
Have a couple of Rockwells in your house.
No, I keep them in the car. In the car.
Just that you travel with them all the time.
That's right.
You know what? I all joking aside, you know, when I was younger, when I used to, you know, play the piano, I did. That's going to shock everyone. But I used to go to the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra, and to me,
I'm done. All right.
One of the things that I really like to support in Winnipeg is there's a great local film scene, the Cinematheque, the Winnipeg Film Group. Those things are very well supported, and the two don't mingle. But
they're institutions, which means that the people will try and support them through thick and thin. As long as there's money available to them, as long as there's the disposable income, people will support it on the things that they care about. And so for some people, that's strictly sports. For some people, that's strictly arts. And for a lot of people, that's a mixture of everything.
Well said.
I think that when we're looking at this study, the Conference Board of Canada, who everyone likes to, they're very well known for their economic reports and, you know, they do that well. But when... The study mentions things like when Vancouver is generally mentioned as being able to support two teams, I've never heard that once. When has anyone ever suggested there could be two teams in Vancouver?
Yeah, that's just stupid.
I've never heard that. So, I mean, I think the study is, we're not going to, nobody's going to remember the study, probably. Nobody remembers it now. I don't think anybody's going to remember it 2 days from now. So, not important. Winnipeg has got a team back. That's the most important thing, and we're doing very well.
And so are the other cultural institutions in the city, and that's important as well. Let's leave it there. When we come back, Arthur Staple from Newsday is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Let's welcome to the program from Newsday in Long Island, Arthur Staple. Welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing very well, thank you. Arthur, let's start with Franz Nielsen. The Islanders re-signed him this week to a four-year deal worth $11 million. Very well-received signing from the punditocracy that covers the hockey world. Why is Franz Nielsen worth $11 million? Why is he so important to the New York Islanders?
Well, he's the only guy on the team, on a team of some talented scorers and a couple of other decent young players who plays in all three situations. He's one of their top penalty killers. He's on the first unit on the power play. He's a second-line center. Maybe that's a notch too high for him on a team that's got a little bit more depth, but he takes faceoffs. He's usually out against the other team's top line. He's a real glue guy, and a team like this needs a guy like that going forward so that they can put, maybe more talented pieces around him and slot him into a more appropriate third-line checking center role. But, he doesn't produce a ton of points, but he's a good presence in the room, and he's a guy that they can send out to do anything. He's also one of the top shootout guys in the league, which, in this day and age, you need those extra points, especially when you're fighting for the playoffs. So, it seems like it was a good... He got the term that he wanted, 4 years. I think the Islanders got the money that they wanted, a little bit lower than what Franz was looking for. And, it's a pretty positive development all the way around.
Arthur, you had a nice article on Newsday about John Tavares, and you kind of broke him down and gave him a grade and broke down the aspects of his game. And I recommend that article on Newsday for everyone. This year he seems to be taking his game to another level, even though he's improved each year, and now he's in his third year. But is he really taking his game to that next level where we can actually say he's reached that superstar status and he's making everyone around him better, and he's probably maybe even make the argument that he was doing that last year too?
He was doing it last year, but I don't think I think he was relying a lot on the skills that he had from an incredibly early age as a teenager. His first couple of years just to sort of get his feet wet. I think last summer is really when he dedicated himself to playing like a pro player, to being, getting a strong base. His skating instructor, he's cited many times as someone who really helped him this past summer. He's just, when he goes in to get the puck, he's coming away with it, and he's going to create a scoring chance. It just seems to be, you see opposing defense when he gets the puck kind of a couple feet inside his own blue line, and they're already back by, in the neutral zone trying to make sure that they can contain him. He doesn't have the kind of wow skills like a Stamkos or somebody where you just see, even an Evander Kane, a guy who's got the kind of breakaway speed and where you just say, okay, this guy's going to do something magical. It's just, Tavares is kind of a bull. He goes in, he gets the puck, he's got the good stick handling skills, he's got good vision, and he's either going to set something up for himself or somebody else. And he's really, as important as his development has been, whoever they put with him, whether it's Matt Molson, who earned himself a 3-year contract last summer because of being able to play with Tavares, or Kyle Okposo, who went on his line a couple of months ago and resurrected what was a terrible season for him. He's just, Tavares is the catalyst for their entire offense. And it's bitten them a little bit because they have trouble scoring goals from other, sources. But, he's between last year and this year, I think he's taken the greatest jump up of any player in the league, good or bad.
Arthur, you mentioned Matt Molson. I think a lot of his success, at least early on in his career, was attributed to playing with John Tavares. Has he carved out a niche for himself? Has he made a name for himself in the National Hockey League at this point in time?
I think he's a dependable scorer. He knows his limitations. He's not gonna be a guy that's gonna blast away from the point or create a lot of his own offense. He's a guy who parks himself in front of the net, goes in the dirty areas, And when his, you know, his line mate makes a great play, he's usually there to either deposit a rebound or put it in, you know, put in a goal off a great pass. So I think that's maybe one of his greatest strengths, is knowing his own limitations and not thinking that he's, you know, he's a superstar player and can play with anyone or at any time. He has a specific role. He does it very well, and there's certainly a need for that on this team that has trouble scoring goals.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day. Jets-Penguins gets underway at 1 o'clock this afternoon on the station. We're joined by Arthur Staple of Newsday. He covers the New York Islanders. They'll be in Winnipeg on Tuesday to play the Jets. Arthur, a player who has sort of fallen back to earth this year is Michael Grabner. He had the great year last year after they acquired him from Florida, 52 points. This year, only 22 points so far. What's been the difference between Michael Grabner of this year versus Michael Grabner of last year?
I think a streaky, skilled guy like that, it's all confidence. And, you know, he's had stretches where he's disappeared, and, you know, he's really, you know, opposing teams have paid much more attention to him to kind of contain his breakaway speed and keep him from generating a lot of the chances that he got last year. But he's still getting chances. He's had a ton of breakaways, and he just hasn't converted. And I think the frustration level is something he's never dealt with before. You know, after having the success, I know it was frustrating for him to try to break in with the organizations that he was with before, but, you know, he was coming off success. He's coming, you know, he's coming off signing a big deal, you know, 5-year contract. The pressure is on, and you know, it's a lot to ask a guy to duplicate that, especially when he's someone who has to really create his own offense away from a guy like Tavares. And, you know, he's had his breakaways. He's had chance after chance, he's snapped a lot of sticks, and you can see it's weighing on him. And I think that's going to be his biggest goal for next year, is to kind of develop that maturity and the thick skin that comes with being a guy who's targeted in a league, you know, a guy who scored 30 or 40 goals and people expect a lot out of in the coming years. So, yeah, it's definitely been a down year, and it's part of the reason why, you know, they've gotten better but not made that leap up into the top 9 or 10 where they're really competing for a playoff spot right now. It's guys like Grabner.
Arthur, we wanted to talk to you about Travis Hamonic. He's a Manitoba boy. He's obviously out with an injury right now, a nose injury, but he's been very good for the Islanders this year, despite the fact he's injured, as I just mentioned. But how good was he getting, and how steadily has he improved, and how big of a part of that defense is he going to be moving forward?
I mean, he's as important to their back line as Tavares is to the forwards. It's that simple. You know, he's really the cornerstone defenseman that they're going to build their future around, and they're really thin on defense, especially up and down the organization. Even in terms of in Bridgeport, they have guys that are, you know, about the same age as Hamonic, but further away development wise. And I think when they called him up, you know, in the early part of last season, more in an emergency basis, they were just hoping for a little stopgap thing, and he's played like a pro, you know, like an NHL player from day one, and he's made some mistakes, but he's really corrected a lot of them. I think this year he's a little bit more frustrated that his offense hasn't been there, but you know, in every other way, I think they have no qualms or concerns about Travis Hamonic, and you know, he's a young man who carries himself like a much older person, and you know, even his attitude when I saw him for the first time after the injury yesterday, got stents in each of his nostrils, and his face looks like it's been completely rearranged, and he's, you know, he's eager to get back out on the ice on Monday. He knows what a crucial stretch this is for the team, and how you know, it's eating away at him that he's not out there, and that's the sign of a guy who's a real leader, and they look to him, and they've really, their defense hasn't actually been too bad without him, but he's a guy who's going to be here for a long time.
You know, Arthur, you look at this defense, and after this year, they have a ton of UFAs, Mark Eden, Steve Staios, Jurcina, Motto, Dylan Reese, among others. They have some young guys you mentioned in the system, such as like Calvin DeHaan. But what does this team, you know, what does this team expect to do, in, whether it be at the trade deadline or in the offseason, to, you know, improve their defense for next season?
I think the way that their season has gone, you know, it looks like they're headed towards missing the playoffs again.
Mm-hmm.
But there's definite improvement in many areas that are things that you can really hang your hat on. I think that the challenge for Garth Snow, which he tried to kind of do more in the way that he acquired James Wisniewski the previous summer, were just kind of looking for a guy who had fallen out of favor somewhere, or was a little too expensive for another team, and steal him away for a mid-round pick. You know, this summer, I think the challenge is, especially with what a painfully thin market, UFA market, it's going to be for quality defensemen. I think the challenge is to sort of take one of these assets that they have and move him for a real top four defenseman. You know, they have Mark Streit for another year. His game is coming around. They have Hamonic. They have Andrew McDonald, who is another real find for them, who's going to be, you know, still under contract for a few more years. That's three of a top four, and you can certainly plug in maybe a couple of rookies or sign more, you know, tryout guys like they did with Stejos for next year. Those guys will certainly be available, but they need to get that one other top four piece, and I think the time has come for them to trade off one of their future assets or a future draft pick for a real, you know, a real serious, you know, late 20s defenseman who can be here for a little while, and that's the main missing piece for them, I think, going forward.
Arthur, we'll let you go on this last question. The Islanders' goaltending situation is a three-headed monster, as they say, except DiPietro, of course, with his injury problems. Both Montoya and Nabokov are UFAs, with the Isles appearing as though they're not going to be in the playoffs. Do you see Montoya or Nabokov leaving at the trade deadline?
I just don't think they'd get enough back. You know, they were down this road or started down this road in the middle of last season with Dwayne Roloson, who, you know, had kind of fallen out of favor in terms of his presence in the locker room. And it was more of a necessity to get rid of him well before the deadline, as they did right on New Year's Day. But the return for that was Ty Wishart, who's at best a, you know, 9 or 10 defenseman on a depth chart. And he's pretty much, you know, they've had a few call-ups and a few injuries, and Wishart hasn't been one of them, which is should be a sign that they didn't really get any kind of value back for Roloson. Arguably, Nabokov is playing better than Roloson was last year. But unless, you know, a team like Detroit has a more serious injury with one of their goalies, or an elite team really, really needs a goaltender, I don't think they're going to get the kind of value back that could justify helping someone else make the playoffs when they're feel like they're still close enough to contend, and with Nabokov playing so well. I think Montoya, you know, I think he is what he is. He's a 25-game-a-year guy, and I think they'd look to keep him around, to sign him to another cost-effective one-year deal next year to be a backup, whether it's for Nabokov on the crazy chance that he's decided he likes Long Island and he wants to come back again, or Kevin Poulin, who's worthy of their star goaltending prospect down in Bridgeport. I think sad part for Rick DiPietro is that he's not even a factor in these discussions anymore, which is quite a change from the last few years. That is, this latest injury has really, you know, he's not around the team very much. He's trying to kind of quietly put his career back together for next season, but I don't even think he's in the conversation. So it's, you know, I think Montoya is a guy that they can look at long term as a backup for the next couple of years, and Kevin Poulin is really the future. Maybe it's not next season. Nabokov comes back, so. I think they have a goaltending situation that's pretty manageable, and I don't think they want to change anything by dumping someone off for a third or fourth round pick.
Arthur Staple from Newsday, Valentine's Day in Winnipeg with the Islanders and the Jets. What could sound better?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm not going to be up there for that one. And, my fiance is very happy about that, and I heard the weather's not so nice, and now I'm happy about it too. But I'm sure it'll be an enjoyable trip for the team.
I'm taking my fiance to the game on Valentine's Day. Who's more romantic than I am? Arthur, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks a lot, Arthur.
Let's go to break. Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day, Jets Penguins at 1 o'clock. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the program. Big thank you to Arthur Staple of Newsday for joining us. If you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Richard Pollock.
No, the first thing I learned this week, Drew, is
never to rely on Ezzy to show up anywhere on
time. Well, that's I learned that many weeks ago.
I deserved that.
Jake Gardner, Drew, I got to see him in person. I tried to watch him fairly extensively on Tuesday Tuesday evening. Jake Gardner is an impressive young defenseman. You know, he lacks the size, and he's never going to have that, obviously. He needs to put on some muscle to take care of himself and make a little bit better decisions on the ice. That comes with age. The muscle will, and so will the decision-making. But his ability to handle the puck, his vision on the ice, and his passing skills proved to be, you know, people talk about obviously Joffrey Lupul being tremendous from that trade. That was a little bit more of the supplemental part of that trade. Jake Gardner was the reason for that trade, and he has turned out to be quite a defenseman, and I think he's only going to get better. He's a nice find on a team that has a fair amount of, to me, dead weight on that back end in terms of based on the money that they've spent, you know, guys like Komisarek and such. So it's a nice cheap asset moving forward.
The latecomer, Ezzie Ginsberg.
The latecomer. I'm the latecomer sitting beside the lunch taker. Richie takes lunches, but he won't meet me halfway. Anyways, we won't get into that right now. I'm going to start off with Andre Pavlik. Okay? Earlier this season, when the Jets were hot in December, I said that he's a Vezina candidate. I'm not backing down. What I learned this week is that Andre Pavlik is still underrated. I think that Andre Pavlik, the Jets don't win that game against Washington if it isn't for Andre Pavlik. And I still think that people think, you know, that he's a good goalie. He's an elite goalie. And, you know, it might be a bit of a stretch to say he's a Vezina Trophy candidate. But I don't think it's a stretch to say that he's a top 10 goalie in the 30-team NHL. I think Andre Pavlik has done an awesome job. And I think he's the MVP of the Jets this year. I said it back in December, and I'll say it again. He's done an amazing job. He's extremely talented, athletic. He was good in the shootout. And we know that Andre Pavlik has struggled in the shootout dating back to Atlanta. But Andre Pavlik is you know, he's 24 years old. And, Richie and I were talking about this, you know, kind of off air going forward and what the Jets are going to have to do in the offseason with their cap situation. You know, you got to think that they want to sign Pavlik long term. So I think that he's an excellent elite goaltender, and he's underrated. And I think this year, he's got 20 wins this year. That's pretty good already.
Pretty good. Richard Pollock.
Max Pacioretty, Drew. You know, known obviously, not obviously, but getting a lot of attention, obviously, for the Zdeno Chara hit last year. But he is tearing it up quietly in Montreal. Is that really possible? I mean, somebody to tear it up quietly in Montreal. Matt Pacioretty came up.
They're too focused on praying for the team now.
Of course, yeah. We'll talk about that after. But I mean, this is a guy who came up and maybe came up a little bit early. I always liked his size. He could skate. He's a beautiful shot. He has a great shot, Drew. This year, he's got 22 goals in 52 games. He looks confident out there. One point to take into account: 21 of those goals, all but one, at even strength. You know, for a team that, again, I don't think what's happening in Montreal, they need new management, but there are pieces there that new management can come in and use. Pacioretty is a guy who's 6'2". He's a young guy, Drew. He's 23 years old. He's a building block. And I think that this is somebody who, for all the attention they got, you got Scott Gomez and when Markov's hurt and all that stuff, Pacioretty looking impressive, improving on his goal totals from year after year. 22 and 52 games. It's something to not look, you know, to not overlook.
Right.
Three. The tardy one, Ezra Ginsberg.
I like that. You're gonna see a theme developing in my three things I learned this week. Alex,
is this about Pavlik again?
Yeah, actually, every single one is Andre Pavlik. Just like Sam Gagner getting all three stars, it's not about Sam Gagner. Alex Edler, everyone's gonna remember him, from his time in the Moose, and he's still very young at 25 years old. But he has quietly become one of the best defensemen in the NHL. And I realize that another Swedish defenseman, Erik Karlsson, has come along really, really well in Ottawa. And he's going to get some Norris Trophy consideration. But Alex Edler this year, you know, he's got 38 points already. He had the injury last year. But he made Christian Ehrhoff expendable. And he's much better defensively. He's a physical defenseman. Very patient offensively. Good on the power play. He can basically play in all situations. Vancouver also quietly is having a really nice run and, you know, faring really well in the Western Conference, setting up for a home playoff seeding. But Alex Edler, I just watch him again and again, and he's a beauty, as Don Cherry would say, and I think he's quietly becoming an elite defenseman. In my opinion, a possible Norris Trophy candidate.
Have you noticed the theme yet?
I've always liked. I guess Winnipeg-based theme. What's the theme? Yeah,
I love the Winnipeag-based theme.
Okay,
well, I have to say, let me quickly
elite, elite defense.
I've always liked Alex Edler. I liked him when he played the Moose. I agree. He's coming. He's ascending to a you know, obviously top two defenseman. He can hit. He can move the puck. He can skate. There's many things he can do. I do love his game, and I think he's a building block there in Vancouver. Two. I don't know if I learned it this week, Drew. But you watch the Calgary Flames, and what are they? And it's a team that lacks overall talent, lacks young talent. Having said that, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that Olli Jokinen has had a really solid year. And I know he went through a huge goal-scoring drought for a while, and now he's been scoring a lot recently. But playing first line with Tanguy and Niginla, you know, putting up a fair, you know, more than modest goal totals. The problem you have with Calgary now, and that's why kind of my point is, you lead into it, the Calgary has no direction. Olli Jokinen's a pending UFA. You signed Tanguy to a long term. You said you're not going to trade Niginla. You just acquired Camilleri. What are you? And what do you do with Olli Jokinen? Right now you're in the cusp of a playoff, so I guess you're going to make a run here. But just I think the overall direction of the Calgary Flames is the sixth thing I learned this week, right? Or the third thing for me personally, is you put yourself, as Jay Feaster has put himself, in a pickle. Because he hasn't made a decision, or he won't acknowledge that this team needs to rebuild. Right?
Yeah.
So he won't trade the veterans for assets. But there are no young assets there, and they're not a Stanley Cup contender. So I guess I've acknowledged the fact that, and Flames fans have acknowledged this for a while, but you watch this team and you say, you know, where is the upside? And you know what you got. I mean, we'll give Olli Jokinen credit, 46 points, 55 games, in pretty impressive totals considering what people had expected of him.
But overall, and they brought him back. People forget that Olli Jokinen left, and then they re-signed him. Turned out to be a good signing.
And you know what? Overall, $3 million, sure. Now they have to, what do? Do they re-sign him? Do they trade him? It's a team that is a complete and total disaster as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and we've documented it ad nauseum with George Johnson.
Just,
and
you know, I just watching them this week, and I watched them against San Jose this week, and I just thought, you know, the flaw after flaw after flaw, not only in the team on the ice, but in the idea of the team and moving forward.
You're not even going to say my title? The late one, the tardy one?
You're just Ezzy at this point. I've taken my shots.
Well, somehow that hurt the most.
Funny, because he had taken shots Thursday before the game.
It's true.
The last thing that I learned this week is that the Detroit Red Wings last night won their 19th straight home game, which is just ridiculous. Have they even lost at home this year? Once? Twice?
Twice. 22-1. If you were here on time, we actually went through
the,
that already.
The Jets actually almost beat them at home.
No. Yeah. There's a nail biter.
The Detroit Red Wings remain, in my opinion, still the gold standard in the NHL. I think that There are. You can make the argument at least that there's four or five teams, elite teams in the NHL right now, and you'd have to say that they're one of them. Even though people are, you know, picking Boston and maybe Chicago and San Jose, but I think Detroit's still in that top five. But the way they play the game, the talent that they have, a guy like Valtteri Filppula, who, you know, year after year he's putting up solid numbers, but he's developed into an elite player. Nicholas Lidstrom is a future Hall of Famer. You've got many Obviously, Hall of Famers on there, but Datsyuk, Zetterberg, the names go on and on. Manitoba's Darren Helm has been doing good this year, putting up career numbers, but the way they play the game, the way they're coached, and everything
That's
about
it,
them is still tops in the NHL, and I would not be surprised at all if Detroit is back in the Stanley Cup Finals and win it again, because you look at what they did last night. Joey McDonald got the win yesterday. Jimmy Howard's been good all year. The way that they put people in positions to succeed is just uncanny year after year after year. And to me, they're still the gold standard of the NHL. And obviously, they're going to be in the Winter Classic, which is awesome because they're the creme de la creme.
I like all three of your things that you learned this week. I have no idea what the trend between the three of them are.
Yeah, what's the trend?
The first two were, I guess, I was saying Edler was an elite defenseman and Pavlik's an elite goaltender, so you have elite there.
And the Red Wings are an elite team?
Yeah, so I guess elite was the theme. You never told me I had to do a theme. So.
You're the one who said it. I didn't say it.
That wasn't an elite three things.
I didn't say
it. Although I didn't really like my third thing.
You both get an F as far as I'm concerned.
I give myself an F.
You can't give us a Gary Lawless F.
Yeah, you give us Gary Lawless F.
Watch me give you a Gary Lawless F. Let's go to break. When we come back, Craig Button's going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Illegal Curve. And our website that currently has the Winnipeg Jets morning papers up and posted is www.illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from TSN and the NHL Network, Craig Button. Craig, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, good morning to you guys, and thanks for having me.
As always, Craig. You know, we once focus a lot on the trade deadline. It's a couple weeks away, a little more than 2 weeks away now. You know, as a former general manager, take us into what's going on in front offices around the league for the next 2 weeks. How do general managers handle the trade deadline? You know, what are they looking at? What are they researching? You know, sort of take us inside what it's like to be a GM when the trade deadline is very close to coming.
It's a little bit interesting. It's a little bit different now with the trade line being after the general manager's meetings. They used to be before the general manager's meetings, or they used to occur after the general manager's meetings, excuse me. So you used to go to those meetings, and you used to be like an eagle eye watching everybody talk. You might have been talking to one team. You see somebody else talking, and, everybody was trying to position themselves to get a player. But I think today, with the salary cap, there's so many different aspects. What can fit into your salary cap has to be the first consideration. So, when you start thinking about the trade deadline, managers have to be thinking about this long ago. What kind of room, what kind of flexibility do they want to work into their salary cap? So, even when you see players moving up and down or leaving dollars open, I mean, that's been going on for a long time. But I think at this point in time, you're two-thirds of the way through the season, well into the stretch run. I mean, you really have to be able to assess your team, and you have to be able to assess what your team needs, and specifically in the areas that can strengthen it. Because you're not just thinking about your own team. It's vis-a-vis who you're competing with for a playoff spot, where you're at in the standings, and what you're trying to do to compete to win a playoff round, to go deeper into the playoffs, and ultimately to compete for the Stanley Cup. All teams don't fall into that category. But you really have to emphasize, what are the pieces that fit for you? What type of player? Where are those players situated? And then that's where you have to spend your time talking to those managers. My experience is that if you're just kicking tires and you're not focused in on what your needs are and you're just talking to everybody around the league, I think that that's where you end up scrambling at the end. I think it requires a directed effort, a very specific effort. And, I was talking to Kent Holland at the prospects game, and, he probably is talking to a handful of teams because he knows what players they want to get into their group. And, those are the teams that he's really spending all the time talking to, because realistically for a team like the Detroit Red Wings, they have so much money to spend. They have a lot of their group intact and in place, and you can't be just chasing around. Now, a team like Columbus Blue Jackets may be a little bit different because they're going to be receiving a lot of calls. So Scott Housen's going to be in a very different place than a person like Kent Holland, because he's going to be receiving a lot of calls. Certainly people will phone about Rick Nash and they'll want to inquire about Jeff Carter, but there's also a couple of other players that, are pure deadline deals that just come in at the deadline and fill out a roster till the end of the year and, bolster a team's lineup a little bit. But, certainly Scott Housen will be multi-pronged and probably talking to upwards of 20 teams.
Craig, you mentioned Scott Housen, the Columbus Blue Jackets, Jeff Carter, and that's a perfect segue because we want to ask you about Jeff Carter. I guess a two-part question. Do you think somebody's going to end up taking a chance on his contract, and would you take a chance on Jeff Carter's contract?
It's amazing that we're talking about Jeff Carter's contract and not Jeff Carter, because I really do think that's the essence of it, and which is very interesting, because when you look at Jeff Carter, he's a good offensive player. He's got size. He can help you on the power play. He's a really good shooter. What people term as a one shot guy. He can score a goal with just one shot. So it is the contract that becomes the challenge, and it's 10 years. No, I'm not even so sure that the $5.3 million cap hit is any type of negative, but it's the 10 years. And here's the thing that I think when you're a team talking to Scott Housen right now about Jeff Carter, I think it's got to be a team that's absolutely convinced that not only does he help you in the short term, but he's part of your long-term efforts. And I think it sounds obvious when you talk about a 10-year contract, but when you start to narrow down who those teams could be, I think you're talking about a very small group, mm-hmm. a very, very small group of teams that could do that. And then you start to ask yourself, okay, who are those teams, and is it necessary for that to happen now? Like, can that happen at the draft? And, you know, I think that Jeff Carter's open to change. I think the Columbus Blue Jackets need to be open to change. So, do I see him moving prior to the deadline? I don't. But I certainly see him moving at prior to July 1, because I think that where he'll fit is on teams that may have fallen short in the playoffs and are now looking for that guy, and for teams that can really slot him in with cap room and say, okay, he's part of our future long term. And again, I think that's a small number of teams.
Craig, a player doesn't have a contract issue in terms of maybe a detriment for a team acquiring him is Tuomas Ruttu, who's gathered a lot of attention. Now, he may still resign with Carolina, but he's likely on his way out. Is this one of those players where there's not much of a, I mean, in my opinion, there's not much of a market out there, so a player who might be a kind of a tweener in a 2-3, who plays a rugged style, but because there's such a lack of forwards, his value increases?
Well, his value increases massively because of the expiring contract, because of his age, and because of his style of play. And certainly, I mean, market dynamics are such that when demand exceeds supply, mm-hmm. Values are going to go up. And when you look at Tuomas Ruttu and the pending UFA for teams acquiring him, there's no problem. I mean, the exact opposite of Jeff Carter.
Right.
You're looking now, he fits right here, right now. What's it going to take for us to get him? And, I would have to say, whether you're a team fighting to get in the playoffs, whether you're a team that wants to try to move up into the standings and get a better seat in the playoffs, or a team competing for the Stanley Cup, the Tuomas Ruttu would be a guy you would be interested in. And I think that definitely and another part of it, too, is there's not a lot of clearly defined sellers at the trade deadline. So, there's very few teams that are saying, okay, first sale signs up. We got these players. Who's interested? Tell us what your offer is, and away we go. And I think that Jim Rutherford likes Tuomas Ruttu, and I think that's why right now he's engaging with him in terms of a contract to see does he want to stay, because I think they like the player. But I also think they're realizing that come free agency, you're in another competitive battle. So, he's going to, Jim Rutherford's very experienced. He's going to be able to assess, okay, what are my chances to sign him now as opposed to sign him July 1st, and what's my return? And I think right now Jim Rutherford wants to make sure that he has that entire scope of probability flushed out so that he can make the best decision for the Carolina Hurricanes. And that forces teams to wait right now on Jim Rutherford.
Right.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day Jets-Penguins gets underway at 1 o'clock on TSN 1290. We're joined by Craig Button of TSN and the NHL Network. Craig, we all, like we said, Tuomas Ruttu's name is out there. Jeff Carter's name is out there. Is there one player that's sort of under the radar right now that you think would really be a good acquisition for some team? One player that nobody's really talking about?
I think there's... For me, there's two players that come to mind, and the one guy that comes to mind is Travis Moen with the Montreal Canadiens. He won a Stanley Cup with the Anaheim Ducks. He's a strong, good skating winger. And you talk about the playoffs, and the playoffs are about detail. The playoffs are about penalty killing. The playoffs are about sacrifice, blocking shots. And when you can add winning experience, players that know what it takes to win at that most important time of the year, I think you can put a check mark beside all those areas and Travis Moen. And he again, he's a UFA, pending UFA, and I think that he would fit in on any number of teams that want to add some size and bulk and experience to their group. And the other guy that comes to mind, and I don't know if he's available, and I don't even know if the team wants to move him along. He's got 1 year left on a contract. It's a pretty significant contract. But there's Lubomir Visnovsky with the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. And I think he's a significant difference maker from the blue line. And when you're looking for edges and you're looking for areas where you can give yourself a boost in your lineup and on the power play and generating offense and getting that puck moving forward into an offensive foray, I think that Lubomir Visnovsky can do that. The Anaheim Ducks have found their way back into a race in the Western Conference. Is it realistic for them to think about the playoffs? I think it is, yes. It's a long road ahead for them. I mean, they have they only have 6 road wins, which is tied for worst in the league with 3 other teams. So they're going to have to win a lot of games on the road. But sometimes it doesn't matter what the task ahead is. It's where you sit, and they right now feel that they have a chance. And we know they went on a great run last year. We know they have skill, but you know, Visnovsky to me might be a guy teams might be interested in investigating.
Craig, we wanted to ask you about the Winnipeg Jets, and the Jets do have a little bit of a list of UFAs. They've got Jimmy Slater, they've got Johnny Oduya, and Ron Hainsey, even though he's not a UFA or RFA, he is at a high salary cap, and he has 1 year left on his contract. But those 3 players specifically, Jim Slater, Ron Hainsey, and Johnny Oduya, what do you think that Kevin Cheveldayoff should do with those 3 players, and which of those 3 players do you think is most likely to move at the trade deadline?
You know, it's a really good question, and I think you have to look at where Winnipeg is. I mean, you talk about in the hunt for the playoffs, they're right there. You know, despite some challenges scoring, they are situated in a spot to compete for the playoffs. And I think Jimmy Slater has played really well for the Winnipeg Jets this year. Really good defensive role, really good penalty killing role. He's chipped in some goals. But I think he's played a really good, hard game for the Winnipeg Jets. And I know Claude Noel likes that type of game from players of Jim Slater's ilk. So I really believe that, you know, if they're serious about continuing their push, and I know they are, into the playoffs, I think Jimmy Slater becomes an important piece, because you have to flip around and think about what could you get for Jim Slater. And I don't think you could get something that would change the balance where you could enhance your team to any significant level and still that would allow you to compete for the playoffs. Defensemen are at such a premium. Now, I would imagine that teams are interested in Johnny Oduya and teams are interested in Ron Hainsey despite another year on his contract. But the Winnipeg Jets, to me, have to be interested in them, because where do you find experienced defensemen? And unless there's And I know there's always this talk, and, you know, every team goes through it. Well, you have defensemen to get a scoring forward. Well, you better be careful, because the Winnipeg Jets are winning. You know, Pavlis has played great. They're winning those low-scoring games, and you need defense. When you start to move defensemen out for forwards and you think it's going to add offense, you know, a lot of times it doesn't work out that way, because those defensemen play 20 minutes a game. They're able to get the puck up to the forwards, and all of a sudden you realize you have a hole there. So while there would be interest in Johnny Oduya and Ron Hainsey, you know, I just don't see a return, unless the Winnipeg Jets say, listen, we can get some prospects or draft picks or whatnot and start to move this into another direction. And I don't really see that happening. But if they do that, then I guess I could see them moving. But to be forthright, I don't see those guys moving right now, because I don't see a massive I don't see a return that tips the scales in a positive manner for the Jets and allow them to stay in the playoff hunt.
Craig, final question here. In terms of, you know, as a GM, going back to you being a general manager in the past, and when you're coming into the trade, I think sometimes fans have an issue with either, you know, their teams, they want them to be contenders, or they want them kind of rebuild. They hate the kind of in the middle. How much pressure on GMs is there from ownership many times to make sure that they get those playoff gates to push the revenue up to more reasonable levels?
Well, I think it's a collaborative effort. You know, ownership, executive management, your coaching staff. I mean, you want an environment where you know, success is present, and making the playoffs is 16 teams make it. You want to do that, and those playoff gates are not just significant in and of themselves. They're significant for, you know, building your forward, your ticket base going forward, your corporate sponsorship, attracting free agents. So it's so multifaceted in terms of making the playoffs. And, you know, the pressure, I don't know if the pressure is applied by ownership. I don't think it's fair. I think ownership sometimes takes a bad rap and saying you apply pressure. When you're a manager and you're part of a group, the pressure you put on yourself to win, to get into the playoffs, to forge an identity, to have a team that can compete on a night-in, night-out basis, and to move your team in the direction of a championship-caliber group. I mean, that's there all the time. So I don't think it becomes a case of ownership putting pressure on you. I think it's about, hey, when is the right time to do it, and what support do you have? And because what you don't want to do is you don't want to be chasing an illusion. And I think that's where a lot of problems start. If we just get this guy, it'll help us. I think you have to be purposeful. But the pressures that come in, it's within the group. And I can pretty much tell you, the pressures you put on yourself, I don't think the pressures from outside ownership, which is inside, or anything else, is any greater than the pressure you put on yourself internally.
Craig Button from TSN and the NHL Network, just terrific insight there. Thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Have a good day.
You too, Craig.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Thanks very much. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Santa Lucia Pizza Game Day on TSN 1290. Welcome back to the show. One final segment. You know it, you love it.
Rapid Fire.
This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tim Nutt at Rumors next week, and a special Valentine's Day promotion, 2-for-1 on Valentine's Day. Ooh. So if you're looking for something to do with your significant other or somebody you've paid for the evening, 2-for-1. Rumors Comedy Club, great laughter, great times. Gentlemen, two of you should go together, be a nice little couple.
Great place for a Valentine's Day. And I imagine Richie's going to have a girl to go out with, but I'll probably just be with my girlfriend, LegalCurve.com.
Yeah, actually, both of you will be at the hockey game.
The website.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a hockey game, yeah. But, yeah. I mean, 2.5 hours. Afterwards, you can go out.
Afterwards, you can cry yourself.
Have a few laughs.
Yeah, there you go. Anyways, let's get into rapid fire. Nick Kiprios has come out and said that the Edmonton Oilers should shut down Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, saying he's still not a man. Yeah. He's up against big guys. Your thoughts on if the Oilers should shut him down?
I can see the point, because he is tiny. But, I mean, we also have to take into account the fact that he's been very successful offensively, the situations to succeed, but he's still had those opportunities, and he's taken them and run with them for the most part. So, while I see his point, I mean, Nugent Hopkins isn't a guy, Drew, that's going to be in the corners and mucking it up too much. I think it's a little bit too far. I still bring him back if he can play and still get that more experience and try and protect him as much as possible.
Yeah, and he is a smaller player, and he's had some injury problems in his first year, and that's a concern, but they know what they're doing with him. And you know, there's 2 months left. The Oilers are not going to make the playoffs. They're nowhere near the playoffs. But you still want to get him that action. And I imagine there's going to be some Oilers guys that are going to go play for Canada at the World Hockey Championships. Sure. He might be one of them. I could see a guy like Jordan Eberle going there and playing. But, no, I think you definitely want to play him.
Also, is he too late to make the decision? You brought him up this year. You can't go back to junior. Yeah. So,
the thing is, I mean, the physical thing is one thing, but he's 18 years old. Right. The thing with Nugent Hopkins is you don't play him if he's injured. And there's a medical staff in place. The Oilers' medical staff are there for that reason. That's the only reason you don't play him. If he can't play, he'll know and the team will know.
Moving to Montreal, the Catholic Church has placed an ad in the Montreal newspapers encouraging people to pray for an 8th-place finish and a playoff spot for the Montreal Canadiens. Besides prayer, what other hope do the Montreal Canadiens have of making that, getting to that playoff spot?
Well said, Drew. That's their only hope. I think Scott Gomez could go on a run here and score a lot of goals. Yeah, I mean, Drew, I mean, that's exactly a hope and a prayer. This team's done. They've had a disastrous season. They need to fire Pierre Gauthier. I'm not sure what they want to do with Randy Kinderworth, but the GM needs to go. He's done a terrible job, and they need to revamp that front office. And we've talked about, you know, who would be capable of filling, and they need to address that this offseason.
I hope they keep Randy Cunningworth at the very minimum as an assistant coach. But
maybe,
Pierre Gauthier,
God.
If you could explain to me why they traded Mike Camilleri, I'd like to
why
hear.
Why they signed Andre Markov.
The Montreal Canadiens.
Why they traded for Thomas
Camilleri. They've won 3 games in a row here, which is nice. They're not going to make the playoffs, but I think that's kind of funny that they put that ad in there. I love, once again, love the city of Montreal.
Wouldn't that money be
beautiful people
Wouldn't that money be better spent on other purposes?
I would think so. Matt Sundin is going to have his jersey honored tonight by the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yep.
In lead up to this, he says, "My strength and maybe my weakness is that I'm a loyal guy. I felt that you spend so much time in an organization, and in Toronto, I always saw myself winning the Stanley Cup in Toronto. I wanted to do that and also realized it would never feel the same doing it somewhere else. Was loyalty too much of a problem for Matt Sundin?"
I can't see it being a problem. Guys, come on. I mean, this guy gave his heart and soul to this organization. He had a no-trade clause at the end of his career, did he not? And he exercises no-trade clause. The reason you sign with a no-trade clause is so you have the ability to exercise your no-trade clause. Yep. He's not in the fault here whatsoever. The poor Toronto managerial decisions, and Pat Quinn alluded to this yesterday, I think, on TSN 1050, were more a part of why Matt Sundin never lifted the cup than Matt Sundin himself.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra.
Well, Gary Lawless is coming on in a second with H&L. He, during the break, told me I'm dead to him.
Wow.
So I'm really upset about that. I'm jeering myself. I should have been here at 7 o'clock. I came here at 7:30. I let you guys down. I let Gary down. I let the station down. I apologize. You know, I'm slowly working on it. It's a process. I'm going to try to wake up early. I have trouble waking up early. Tim's giving me the music, so I'll throw it to Richie.
Chris Phillips, 1,000th game this week, and he scored 2 goals. There's, you know, there's few things in this game, few people in this game better than Chris Phillips. Good guy on and off the ice.
Yeah.
Really nice to see him, and he deserved it.
I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer the Detroit Red Wings. Tomorrow, they're going to wear white sweaters with a commemorative locomotive patch on it.
Yep.
Those sweaters will then be sold as a fundraiser for the Love for Locomotive program.
Yep.
So, you know, kudos to the Red Wings for signing up for that. Of course, you know, Brad McCrimmon was a big part of the Red Wings organization. Somehow it's 10 a.m. and we're done for the day. I'm not even sure how that happened. Big thank you to Arthur Staple from Newsday. A big thank you to Mike Colligan from HockeyWriters.com. And a big thank you to Craig Button of TSN and the NHL Network. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Carbone Coal-Fired Pizza, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, The Cheer Barn Grill, and David Carr of Monopoly Realty. A quick plug for myself, I'm hosting the morning show Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, so in case you haven't had enough of me, you can hear me Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Make sure you're up in time, Drew.
I'll try to be up in time. Hustler and Lawless are next. Rick Ralph following them. Jets Penguins at 1 o'clock. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk. Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.